It is Friday, March the 3rd. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, U.S. Attorney General and whether he had unlawful contact with Russia.
This is historical. We've never seen anything quite like this before. And that is something that we need to remember.
Also ahead, the plight of migrant children.
Children have been in the shadows, effectively, for so long on this crisis. And what we're trying to do is really shine a light on what's happening.
Also ahead, the Songwriters Hall of Fame and what's happening on social media. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has recused himself from any federal investigation of alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election here in the U.S. Sessions met with reporters from the Washington Post, where they reported that the U.S. senator and member of the Trump campaign, Sessions, held two pre-election meetings with Russian ambassador to the U.S., Sergei Kislyak, and withheld that information during his confirmation hearing.
My reply to the question of Senator Franken was honest and correct as I understood it at the time. I appreciate that some have taken the view that this was a false comment. That is not my intent. That is not correct.
Questions have hovered around whether Sessions talked about the campaign with the Russian ambassador. Lawmakers from both parties have demanded Sessions recuse himself, while some Democrats say he should resign, accusing him of lying under oath. All of this comes just after President Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, resigned after allegedly lying about having contact with the Russian ambassador before Mr. Trump was inaugurated. International Edition's Lori London asked the former CIA intelligence agency officer Jack Rice if Sessions recusing himself will be enough to ease the criticisms.
The Trump administration hopes it is, but I don't think it is. At this point, what we know is this. We know that Michael Flynn wasn't the end of the story. We know that it's broader than that. And what we see from Jeff Sessions, and you can look at the tapes and you can look at the transcripts and you can look at what it is that he said after he swore an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, he said something else. And that seems to be the problem. And there's a reason he had to recuse himself, because he may become the target of this investigation. But I don't think it ends there. This is the front end of an investigation, and if you pull somebody in who's actually independent.
President Trump, not long before Sessions actually decided to recuse himself, said he had full confidence in his attorney general and that he didn't feel that Sessions should recuse himself. Is that sort of statement likely to cause him problems as well?
Probably not yet, although, frankly, if you compare that to the statement he made about Michael Flynn, it's almost the same. That was what Michael Flynn was talking about, and he said, well, I would have had him do this anyway. I have complete confidence in him. I don't think that's going to make a difference when it comes to Donald Trump, but what I do think is that the expansion of this investigation beyond his national security advisor to his attorney general and all of the close supporters, that first ring during the race, those are going to be the targets of this investigation now. What are the connections? And remember, there is one bottom line here. And the bottom line is there a mole in the White House? And if there is, how high does it go? That's the question that really has to be forefront, and this investigation has to drive with that in mind.
When you say a mole, you're not meaning the people that are leaking information, are you?
No, I'm not. I mean, that's the fascinating part, because there's the dichotomy that we're seeing from the Trump administration saying this is fake news. And then we have the dichotomy, which is they're saying the real crime is the leakers. Well, let me tell you something. If you're leaking fake news, then it's not a leak. Then it's not a crime. That's just the truth. You have to have actual facts. And the actual facts that need to be addressed here are whether or not just that the Russians manipulated this election, but are now pulling strings in the White House to get specific actions coming from that White House. That is what needs to be looked at, and whether or not there are people who have been compromised to actually make that happen.
And if people are leaking that information that does turn out to, in fact, be true, should they also be prosecuted?
In my mind, no. It's a slippery slope, and it's important that security be maintained because we need to make sure the classified information is protected. That's very, very important. But at the same time, this is one thing that I saw in Washington as a former CIA officer, and that's that we have a tendency of overclassifying information regularly. We do this all of the time. And one of the reasons that it gets overclassified is because people are protecting themselves. Classifying of intelligence is not about protecting wrongdoing. It's about something else. It's about protecting national security. And you should be able to do both. But I would argue that protecting national security from wrongdoing is paramount. The Trump administration at this point is trying to push the ultimate and most important issue aside because they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to look at it. They certainly don't want to acknowledge it. It's much easier to say, look over here. Don't look what's behind the curtain. We have to know what's behind the curtain.
Lastly, you know, we've got another big story that has come out. It's not getting as much attention, but that is that in the last days of the Obama administration, all the intelligence that they were starting to discover regarding potential Russia ties to the Trump campaign, it looks like they did a mad dash to spread the information to as many government agencies as possible so that this information wouldn't somehow be removed by the incoming administration. As a former intelligence officer yourself, what does this tell you?
This is historical. We've never seen anything quite like this before. And that is something that we need to remember. But what I also think is important is that it does appear that there was a fear that the new administration would drop all this into a box and drop it in the Potomac. And that says something. It's clear that what the Obama administration did was provide evidence of this potential wrongdoing to other intelligence organizations to make sure that everybody was looking at it. But they also provided it to the Hill. And specifically telling the Hill, according to all reports that I'm seeing, that this needs to be spread amongst the intelligence committees, both Republicans and Democrats. It's important that this information get out so it doesn't get dropped in that box. But you know what? Frankly, that's the right answer. Because if it's dropped in the box and dropped in the river, we all get hurt. As Americans, we all get hurt. This is not a left or right question.
Is it cliche or is it fair to say where there's smoke and there's smoke and there's smoke, there's probably fire?
When you have this many people involved and the information seems to have been bandied about almost haphazardly, my fear is that this is going to get much bigger and that the smoke with a little more smoke and a little more smoke may ultimately prove the fire exists, but we have to find out.
That is Jack Rice. He is a former U.S. Central Intelligence Agency officer. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. Later in the program, we'll find out what's being said on social media about all of this, and we'll also look at the state of Donald Trump's presidency. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Earlier in the week, President Trump addressed a joint session of Congress here in Washington, and now much of official Washington is focusing on how the president projected what they think was a softer, more optimistic tone in his speech. And now supporters, critics, and analysts are all wondering if this change is fleeting or is it here to stay? A key question as Congress begins the task of grappling with Mr. Trump's ambitious domestic agenda. VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone is following the story.
President Trump meets with congressional leaders at the White House to discuss moving forward on his ambitious policy agenda.
We're just here to start the process. It begins as of now, and we think we're going to have tremendous success.
Trump is getting good reviews for Tuesday's address to a joint session of Congress, especially his softer, more optimistic tone.
I am asking everyone watching tonight to seize this moment, believe in yourselves, believe in your future, and believe once more in America.
It was a presidential moment for a president in need of one, said analyst Jeremy Mayer via Skype.
This was the best speech I've ever seen the man give, and I've been watching him very closely. There was an air of compromise, an air of calmness, of let's all work together, that you just don't see in Donald Trump's rhetoric very often.
Trump's shift in tone could help with tough congressional battles to come over health care and tax reform, says John Fortier.
A lot of the details and how to do it is still very much a difficulty for him. So for him to show some leadership or show that he has a path to work with these Republicans who are broadly with him, but there are many, many obstacles ahead, I think that's something that he would be wise to do.
But many Democrats remain skeptical, including Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
His speeches are always totally detached from reality. He talks to the working folks of America. They were his main constituency. But the way he's governed has been totally with the hard right special interests against the working people.
Two new polls showed voters reacted favorably to Trump's speech, an area where the president could use a boost, says expert James Thurber.
He's at the lowest percentage in the polls at 40% than any president since we've been measuring popularity of the president since Eisenhower.
So why not join forces?
Republicans and Democrats alike are also wondering whether this softer, more disciplined President Trump is here to stay, says Jeremy Mayer.
Trump has shown last night that he's up to the job of acting like a real president, finally. But actually doing the work, yet to be seen if he can do that.
That could be a challenge if Trump wants to turn his campaign promises into action. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
New report from UNICEF says refugees and migrant children and women often experience sexual violence as well as other abuses as they try to make their way from Libya to Italy. The report is titled A Deadly Journey for Children, the Central Mediterranean Migrant Route. At least three-quarters of the children interviewed said they had experienced violence, and nearly half of the women and children interviewed said they repeatedly were sexually abused. Sarah Crow is a spokesperson for UNICEF. She speaks here with VOA's Kim Lewis about the report.
What this shows is the level to which children have been in the shadows effectively for so long on this crisis. And what we're trying to do is really shine a light on what's happening to children who are in detention in Libya, but also to the issue of migration from the very moment children leave their homes and make this extraordinary journey across the desert and then into Libya and indeed across the sea. So what we're seeing is deeply disturbing. It's really shocked many people to see the level of abuse, the level of exploitation. Children are lured by smugglers into making the crossing and indeed are left in this kind of limbo situation for months and months on end in detention in Libya.
When this survey was conducted, what type of psychological damage do you think was revealed when children are experiencing this?
Well, the damage may only be known in the long term. That's the sad fact of the matter. It's also in the statistics. We know that there are roughly 23,000 children who are refugee and migrant children who are in Libya currently, but the real figure is probably three times higher than that. And we just do not have the kind of access across the country because Libya is in a fragile situation right now. The crossing on the central Mediterranean is also the most deadly. Last year, 5,000 people lost their lives at sea, and it's an extraordinary number. And the real figures for children we may never know because the majority of those arriving into Italy, 92% of them, are unaccompanied. They're traveling alone, and their deaths sadly go unreported and unrecorded. So not only is it what's happening at every step of the way across the Sahara, this extraordinary journey, but also in transit in Libya and indeed crossing the central Mediterranean. And once they arrive in Europe, it is just the beginning of another journey.
How do children get separated from their families? Does it start at the beginning, or are they sent alone, or the separation occurs just because of the types of people that they're with, the smugglers and traffickers?
There are many different reasons why children get separated, or indeed why they leave alone, why they leave their homes and travel alone in the first place. For example, story of a 9-year-old girl in the report in the Child Alert, whose name is Cammy, we call her. She was taken into the sea with her parents, and the boat, the rubber dinghy, collapsed, and she lost her parents at sea, and she was returned into a detention center. So there's almost this kind of recycling of migrants and refugees in these detention centers, almost as if people are a commodity. And then there are other reasons why what we call the push factors that push people to leave their homes in the first place. And this can be a wide range of persecution, conflict. We know that many are leaving Boko Haram territory in northern Nigeria. Some girls from southern Nigeria are lured with a promise of a job, say as a hairdresser in Europe, and then they're forced into prostitution. So we're seeing a great range of stories and reasons why children are leaving their homes in the first place.
UNICEF has developed a 6-point plan of action for children that are uprooted. So how will this plan be implemented to really help?
And that's why we're calling really for solutions that are not just short-term responses, but actually with a long-term view, because migration is clearly here to stay. People will continue to move as long as there's a reason for them to leave their home in the first place. It's part of humanity. But we've seen this kind of level of suffering is really intolerable at the moment from what we're seeing in Libya and from what people, what children are going through at every step of the way. So what we're calling for is that children should be protected, particularly the unaccompanied, should be protected from exploitation and violence, that detention should never be a solution for migration for children who are migrating, and that families should be kept together because that's the best way to protect children and to give them legal status. So these are some of the things that we're calling on a number of member states, but particularly right now, of course, to the EU, because there are moves afoot to potentially return people to Libya. And this would not be the right move at the moment because Libya is not a safe place for children who have already endured so much.
That's Sarah Crowe, a spokesperson for UNICEF. She was speaking with Kim Lewis, who is host of the VOA program Africa News Tonight.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
And now it's time to find out what's trending on social media. G. Abby Lee here with the latest. Hey, G.
Hello, Steve. Hashtag sessions is the top trending hashtag at this hour, and as you mentioned, the Attorney General recused himself from current and future investigations related to Russia and the election. Now, he was under a lot of pressure from both parties to shine more light on his meetings with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. Although critics say it's a step forward, the main complaint on social media is that the press conference was not very helpful. A Huffington Post editor tweeted, "It raised 10 times more questions than it answered."
Having attended many a press conference in my time, both locally and nationally, I have to say often the situation is that there are a lot more questions than there are answers. However, we as reporters always want the answers, we do. Speaking of press conferences, tell us about the good deed by actor Tom Hanks.
Sure. The Oscar-winning actor gifted the White House press corps with a new espresso machine. It's the third espresso machine he gifted to reporters covering the White House, this time replacing the one from 2010.
That really was kind. It was fun to see photos of the new machine all over Twitter. It was great.
Same here. Just as popular on social media was a photo of the card he sent with the espresso machine. It reads, "To the White House Press Corps. Keep up the good fight for truth, justice, and the American way, especially for the truth part." And being reporters, of course, one of the trending tweets had to be punny. Tom Hanks likes the White House Press Corps a latte.
You got anything else for us?
One of the hottest social media IPOs, Snapchat's parent company Snap Inc., ended its first day as a public company, up 44% since opening. That's all for me today. I just want to say it was great working with you on social media segments for the IE.
And many thanks to you, G. Lots of great social media segments over the years. We certainly are going to miss you. I'm sure the listeners will as well. G will be joining our staff of newscasters, and we wish you a lot of luck, G. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter and Facebook at G Abby Lee. I'm on Twitter as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Black holes are regions of space with such incredible gravitational pull that not even light can escape them. Circling the black holes are disks of dust and gas they feed on, called accretion disks. While black holes may have a voracious appetite, scientists say they can only consume so much at one time. Because of this, black holes have been known to be sloppy eaters, tossing out quick-moving streams of hot gas winds that can blow throughout their host galaxies. Scientists studying data from NASA's New Star Telescope and the European Space Agency's XMM Newton Telescope have just found that these winds can get incredibly hot and then cool down within just a few hours. The researchers, who say these winds can travel at a quarter of the speed of light and contain a vast amount of matter, can actually disturb star formation within the black hole's host galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. You know, the Songwriters Hall of Fame is about to induct its latest class of artists, including the first ever rap star. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald shares the prestigious list of music writers with my colleague Jim Stevenson.
Popping bottles, putting supermodels in a cab. Proof. I guess I got my swagger back.
It's so important to have the Songwriters Hall of Fame because without songwriting, you got nothing.
That's exactly right. And, of course, in the Grammys, the Song of the Year honors the songwriter, whereas Record of the Year honors the performer. In many cases, they're one and the same, but it's an important distinction. The Songwriters Hall of Fame, it doesn't get as much attention as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, primarily, I guess, because it doesn't have a physical location. It doesn't have a museum where people can go to. But the Songwriters Hall of Fame came into existence first. It's been around since 1969.
Well, I guess you could say that this Hall of Fame was virtual before virtual existed.
You're virtually correct. In any event, the class of 2017 was announced. Jay-Z is now the first rapper to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He is a 21-time Grammy winner, and he's been recording for 21 years. His first album, Reasonable Doubt, came out in 1996. He sold more than 100 million records. His net worth is estimated at around $500 million. And as people might know, he and his wife Beyonce are expecting twins.
So we can say a lot to unwrap for the rapper.
Exactly right. And life is good for Jay-Z. Along with Jay-Z, we had some other distinguished songwriters entering the hall. Among them is Max Martin, which is a name that people might not know, but they know his music. He is a Swedish songwriter-producer who, over the past 18 or 19 years, has written or co-written 22 number one hit singles on the Hot 100 chart, and that puts him third on the all-time list behind John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Max Wow. Martin has worked with, you name it, he's worked with them. Along with Jay-Z and Max Martin, you have a very well-known name, Berry Gordy, mm-hmm. the founder of Motown. And I'm actually a little surprised that it took the Songwriters Hall of Fame this long to put him in there, but he founded Motown Records way back in 1958, and he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. Kenny Babyface Edmonds started out as a musician. He was in a band called The Deal. And he and his partner, L.A. Reid, became singer-songwriter-producers. Together, they wrote over 26 chart-topping R&B singles. Kenny Babyface Edmonds has won 11 Grammy Awards. He's worked with Madonna. He's worked with many other top acts. The team of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis took the same route as Babyface, huge hitmakers in the 1980s and 90s. The band Chicago was among the top hit acts of the 70s and 80s. They've sold more than 100 million records. And they finally made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2016. So there is your Songwriters Hall of Fame class for this year. The Hall's 48th annual induction and awards dinner will take place on June 15th in New York City.
Our own Ray McDonald, you can recognize him each week by listening to his Top 20 Countdown on VOA 1.
And you can also visit me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits and our collective musical Facebook page at VOA 1 The Hits.
Ray, thanks so much.
You got it, Jim.
Always love hearing from those guys. Jay-Z, huh? Berry Gordy. No one knows that he's written so many songs, do they? Bunches of them. Way to go, Barry. Anyway, many thanks to you for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Hope you'll stay tuned. Latest world news is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States designated Iran as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1984. It also designated several foreign terrorist organizations, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic Jihad, which receive substantial support from the Iranian regime. The U.S. continues to counter Iran's support for terrorism, destabilizing regional activities, human rights abuses, and ballistic missile program, including, when appropriate, through sanctions and by working with allies and partners in responding to these activities. At the recent Munich Security Conference, the Iranian government's role in supporting terrorism and destabilizing the region was denounced by several participants, including the foreign ministers of Saudi Arabia and Turkey, as well as the United States. Given the multiple interrelated conflicts in the Middle East today, Iran's continued actions and strident rhetoric undermine regional stability and threaten multiple countries, including close allies of the United States. At the conference, Vice President Mike Pence gave clear assurance where the U.S. stands on a nuclear challenge from Iran.
Under President Trump, the United States will remain fully committed to ensuring that Iran never obtains a nuclear weapon capable of threatening our countries, our allies in the region, especially Israel.
In early February, the White House put Iran on notice that its malign activities in the Middle East would not go unanswered. In a move separate from U.S. commitments under the JCPOA, which was solely focused on Iran's nuclear program and continues to be implemented by all parties, the Treasury Department sanctioned 25 individuals and entities involved in Iran's ballistic missile development and sponsorship of terrorism. As a result of these designations, all property subject to U.S. jurisdiction are blocked, meaning any assets of these individuals and entities that come into possession of a U.S. person are blocked, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in transactions with these designated individuals and entities. The United States is committed to holding Iran accountable for its malign activities. It is wise to make certain that Iran recognizes that what it is doing is getting the attention of a lot of people, said Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. And we have the responsibility, along with the rest of the nations that want to maintain stability, to be absolutely clear with Iran in this regard. It does no good to ignore it. It does no good to dismiss it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.